The Titans of Trial podcast is sponsored by the Florida Justice Association Research and Education Foundation, promoting the study and understanding of Florida's civil justice system and how its preservation benefits consumers, victims, and all Floridians. Learn more at floridajusticeassociation.org.
From the Florida Justice Association, these are the Titans of Trial.
It was something that really gnawed at you to pursue and to win it if you could.
Booty Nance talks about being one of the lawyers who took on Big Tobacco in a landmark Florida case, and on how he survived a plane crash.
And the next thing that we hear is this, bam, 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 boom, 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 boom. The motor's coughing.
And his concerns about the future of the legal profession after 60 years of practice.
We got too many lawyers. I think as far as the advertisement is concerned, I think they've made a grave mistake. They've made several of them, and people advertise and over-advertise like used car salesmen.
Welcome to Titans of Trial, featuring the personal stories of the men and women who've made a difference to the practice of trial law in Florida. I'm Paul Jess, Executive Director of the Florida Justice Association. It was his older sister's mispronunciation of the word beauty that, as just an infant, gave James Nance the nickname that would stick with him for life. Booty. With a name like that, he had to be a good trial lawyer. And he was, and still is today, as he goes into the office at nearly 88 years old. Booty Nance of Melbourne was one of the 9 Florida trial lawyers who took on Big Tobacco in the 1990s, eventually settling for the landmark $13-plus billion from the tobacco industry to the state of Florida for Medicaid recoupment costs of 6 smokers. While he has top professional honors, he's a member of the inner circle of advocates. He's also known as an avid hunter and as a prankster. These skills have helped him innovate creative approaches to collecting late judgments and surviving cancer. Booty Nance sat down with Florida Justice Association radio host Harvey Bennett in July 2018 for an interview that reflects the recurring theme in his law practice and his life. He's had fun.
Booty, you've been practicing law since 1957, most of that time in personal injury and wrongful death right here in Melbourne, Florida. Happy 60th anniversary to you, sir. How does that feel?
Well, it feels pretty good, frankly, because I'm happy I'm still alive and still able to enjoy some of the things that accompany being a lawyer, including fun type stuff.
Absolutely. You've had a heck of a career. I know that probably the thing that you're best known for was being one of the 9 Florida Big Tobacco lawyers who took on Big Tobacco on behalf of the state of Florida to recoup Medicaid payments from medical expenses for smokers. A huge settlement, $13-plus billion. What role, Booty, did you play in that landmark case?
Well, they had Steve Yeard and I went over to the courthouse, and we sat there and did some participation, but not much, with the two guys that were supposedly going to try the case, which was Bob Montgomery and Shelley Schlesinger. And then we did whatever that was necessary to try to help out with any way we could, like taking depositions away from the courthouse. It was interesting, it was kind of scary, but also we had a good bunch of guys, and we had a good time with it. When the final announcement was made, you know, the governor settled this thing without us even knowing about it. So that was a good time, too. We enjoyed that a lot. I was very, very proud of Governor Childs, and he was right with us all the time. Just a good guy. And unfortunately, he passed away, I think, about 3 or 4 weeks afterwards. And Buddy McKay, the lieutenant governor, had us up to the Capitol for dinner, and we enjoyed that. And
was that the case that you were most proud of?
That's hard to say, because some of them are, you know, probably long lasting. That would probably be the case, because it was a huge case.
Well, and the societal change that came about because of that, which every trial lawyer can only dream of.
Well, I'll tell you exactly what happened there. Fred Levin put this all together, and he gave us lots of names, and we had a meeting of lawyers down at Shelley Schlesinger's office in Fort Lauderdale. And I could be wrong about the number. I think it was approaching 40 law firms were down there. And this is the 9 that stayed that said, yeah, we can. And the rest of them said, no, we can't. And they, of course, I think some later changed their tune very rapidly, but that's the way it was.
Yeah, you folks were given very long odds at being successful. I remember that, right?
Exactly. We used to have these meetings at 10 o'clock on the phone every Wednesday morning. And, you know, sometimes we'd have nothing to talk about, and sometimes we'd have a hell of a lot to talk about, you know. So, yeah. And then when we went down there to try it, we were there for, I think, 2 months or so, maybe a little over 2 months, could be, that we were there in West Palm and involved into the actual selection of the jury and et cetera. Ron Motley and his group from Charleston, they had a plane virtually every day bringing stuff down there. And we had a full library set up in the hotel where we were. It was very interesting just to observe what all went on trying to do what we were supposed to do in this case.
Millions of documents. Very, very complex case.
Very.
A case that eventually involved allegations of racketeering.
Yes.
Where they tried to keep information away from you and the team.
Yeah, that's correct.
Not the easiest case in the world.
Nope. It wasn't, but it was something that really gnawed at you to pursue and to win it if you could.
And you did. You and the team did.
And again, I'll say Governor Shiles was really into this. He was after it. He was like the coon dog after the, you know, after the coon.
Booty, you were not only in a court battle at that time, but a personal battle as well.
I thought I was having one thing, and it turned out to be lymphoma. My doctor here sent me to Stanford, and I got out to Stanford and with my wife to stay 3 weeks, but I had an infection from where they'd taken the donor tissue, and they couldn't find out much out there. We saw one of the world's leading authorities out there on lymphomas, and he became my doctor, or my away doctor for years. For 30 years, I made a substantial contribution to the Cancer Society at Stanford. I was taking chemotherapy for 4 months, and Monday and Tuesday, and then 3 weeks later, it come back again. So I would be here on Monday, and I would leave Tuesday and go stop by West Palm. So then I had to have I had to have 20 shots of radiation after the 4 months of chemotherapy. But the chemotherapy, I lost my hair. Other than that, I didn't really have much of a problem.
And you had been a lifelong smoker up to that point, ironically.
I continued on. I thought that, you know, the end was coming soon. But got through the chemo and got through. I had been diagnosed with that in 1981. And this, so I had about 14 years with no treatment whatsoever. I was to have 20 shots of radiation. And instantly enough, down where this occurs in a hospital, it's a very serious situation. So I'm trying to lighten it, but my part of it is, so on the 19th day, 19th shot, I should say, was on a Friday, and I got one of the investigators here to go by the porno store up in Cocoa Beach and get me a black rubber penis. So I had that, and they were having you covered up with a little towel over your privacy. And I only saw the doctor one time, and he got little tattoos to indicate where you were, the radiation. Anyway, that Monday, these two technicians that worked in there, both were divorced. And one I had that particular day was talking about her new boyfriend and going skiing. And while I was lying there, she's adjusting the machine over me. And I said, pardon me, do you think you might have burnt me a little too much last week? And so she said, let me see that. So and you could hear her scream all over the hospital. I mean, I thought she was going to have a heart attack. Anyway, I got to laughing there, and I thought, I'm the only one down here laughing in this whole place.
You were. Oh, my God. What a prankster. Have you always been a prankster like
yes,
that?
Yes, sir. I've also had some things pulled on me, too, that were really wild.
Well, I bet you have.
Yeah. The doctors really get a kick out of that. I mean, they can't believe somebody would do that to them, you know. But it was all in fun.
Booty, among your many distinctions in a long career, you earned the first $100,000 verdict and the first $1 million verdict here in the 18th Judicial Circuit, which includes Brevard and the Seminole counties. You were correct. A trailblazer.
Yes, sir.
You've been in semi-retirement now for 12 years. What keeps you coming into the office? What keeps you going in law?
Well, I'm used to it. See, when I came here under tough circumstances, I was married in Miami, which was really my second marriage at that time. I got married when I was going to Stetson for 9 months, married over there to a very nice young lady and so forth, but I guess we just didn't, no big problem, we just didn't see it. She probably could have married someone much older, and I probably shouldn't have married anybody. So anyway, I got married in Miami, and that was Jamie's mother. We were going through a divorce, and a friend of mine got me to come to Orlando, and I was working for a lawyer in Orlando, and ran into in a bar one night a doctor from over here in Melbourne who was from my hometown in Alabama. And he ultimately prevailed upon me to come over here. And I did. I came over here with very, very little money. And the lawyer I was working for gave me three little cases. One of them was a rear-end collision. No big deal, and one of them was a death case, and I've forgotten what the third one was. But anyway, the cases he didn't want to begin with. And so anyway, I came over here knowing one person in this county was Dr. Roberts. He provided me with a house over here on the side of the road, and I lived in one side of it and practiced law on the other side. That's basically the start of it. So first trial I got over here with that was with one of those cases that the lawyer that's over in Orlando sent me, and I got a nice verdict in it, and then the second one, I don't know what happened to the third one. I don't think I filed a suit in that one. Anyway, so we just progressed then on for years and years.
Booty, what made you want to be a lawyer?
It's a long story. I never had a secret desire to be a lawyer. I'd gone to Alabama, and I went to Auburn, got a guy transferred back down to Stetson. I had seen Stetson before, and I thought I wanted to play football. But I went out to Alabama, and after about spring training, I knew I was not SEC material. And then when I got to Auburn, we got out of Auburn and came to Stetson, be the third quarter, and I got down to Stetson in time to go out for spring training and so forth. And anyway, then stayed at Stetson and was doing well. Then I got married in the fall, and then we separated in the spring of 1953. And in the meantime, I had gone to a dance with my wife, and I got reported to the powers to be at Stetson as having something alcoholic to drink at an off-campus dance. Stetson at that time, he couldn't even use the word dance in the school newspaper. Anyway, I was in the law school. I had gotten into law school because I needed to finish do a ROTC. I left one semester of that, so I went to law school. That's where I got into law school. And so therefore, when everything ended up, I go to another law school, but I lifeguarded that summer in Daytona. I almost didn't leave, anyway, went to Miami, and when I got down to Miami, the dean of the law school interviewed me after he found out what all had happened, and he said, well, I'm going to take you in some things that, some requirements that I just don't believe in. He said, and don't ask me anymore because I went to Stetson and I know what I'm talking about.
Now, you almost didn't go to college.
That's correct.
Tell us about that.
Well, my father worked real hard in the cotton business. He had a warehouse, and he bought and sold cotton, and in the spring we sold fertilizer. Well, I graduated. I was 17 years old, and I wanted to stay there at home, I thought. And I told my father that I was not going to go to college. And he said, well, he'd work real hard to educate my sister and me, and if I didn't go to college. He said he had a friend who was the chairman of the draft board, and that he would just contact him and tell him that I was number one, ready to go. And I went down to the pool room where I meditated a little bit, and I thought, well, yes, he could do it, and he would do it, and a recipient would do it too. So I went to Alabama that fall.
College was looking pretty good at that point.
Yeah.
Who is your mentor when you began the practice of law and those first few years practicing? Did you have one?
I had worked for the state attorney when I was going getting ready for the bar. The job was to deliver criminal subpoenas in Dade County. And I did that that summer, and then I got through the bar and got a job, and I worked on that for 6 months, and then Dick Gerstein called me again to come over to go to work if I wanted to with the state attorney. And
he was the state attorney in Miami, in Dade County at the time.
He was the state attorney, and he was a good one. So he had, in the campaign, which I'd helped out with when I was long before that, he swore he wouldn't hire anybody except experienced lawyers. So that's why he didn't take me to begin with. And anyway, I had a good time. And then working for him was an experience. Actually, I should have stayed there longer, but I went to work for this other law firm, and then the next thing you know, about a year or so, 2 years later, they lost their chief insurance company. So anyway, then I worked down in Miami myself. Well, interesting enough, I used to do a lot of DUIs down there, and I had 19 straight wins one time. And then on the 20th one was the only person I had that had could really afford it, because I was getting $100, $150, things like that. Anyway, that's the one I lost.
One of life's ironies. Booty, how did you go about honing your trial skills?
The first trial I had was with the firm I went to work for when I got admitted, finally got admitted to the bar. And I was trying a personal injury case, and it was nothing serious, but it was one that should have been won. And I tried it the first day of trial, was for a judge that I had met before, and I was so uptight, I barely could talk every time I had to get up and speak. So anyway, and I was rooming with another guy down in Miami at the time, and I remember going home that first night, and I said, you know, I'm gonna pray to the Lord that if I ever get through with this one, I won't ever do this again.
Wow.
And that's so I learned it by most of it by hard knocks, frankly. And that's something that goes along with trial work. I can't exactly say I learned it, but hard knocks teach you different things that you won't repeat.
But you won that case.
I won the case. I couldn't have hit. The judge wouldn't let me lose it.
So that one win brought you back, and you continued to practice trial law.
Yes, that one win. I thought about that for a while, but I mean, I never will forget that night that I was hit. I was really upset. I wasn't crying. I was just, I was too upset to cry.
Looking back over your career, what's been the most rewarding part of being a plaintiff's attorney?
I guess the most rewarding part is winning a case and for the people that need the money and need to be helped. And I think that's the most fun out of it. You take that with a few drinks afterwards, and that's a lot of fun.
What was your key to success as a lawyer? Was it any one skill, or was it an attitude?
I think I'm pretty easy to get along with, and I didn't offend jurors. I didn't think I was, anyway. And I was trying to be a solid citizen, I guess. When you tell the jury something in an opening statement, you got to live up to it. And I think that's what I tried to do. Not successfully every time, because sometimes there were other things that were out there.
Was there any point in your life, either professionally or personally, that you didn't think you were going to make it?
Oh, yes. For about 3 minutes right behind you, you'll see what that is.
Four men escape injury, the Brownsville Herald.
Airplane crash. Another guy and I were answered an ad, and we went hunting, and it was a magazine published it, and it was a bad deal. And so I wrote them and told them about it. They said, well, let's send you down. You want to go on a free trip down to Mexico? This place called Alta Vista. We had a free trip for a week of, you know, 50 bird dogs, 50 bass boats, and so forth. And we would be hunting some kind of birds down there, whatever. Anyway, so we took them up. We had to get down there. So we got to Brownsville, Texas, by, I don't know, Delta, whoever it was. Anyway, but then we get on the private plane the next morning to go down to Alta Vista. We took off from Brownsville and got about 400 feet. I don't know. I moved over. I had my little camera out and I took a picture. And the next thing that we hear is this bam, 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 boom, 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 boom. The motor's coughing. Mm. And I moved there with my back to the pilot, and my friends were looking at it. And he said, "Oh, Booty," said, "we're going in." And I said, I used a bad S word. Then I buckled my seatbelt up and, you know, said my little prayers. And next thing you know, we are hitting. But the pilot did do a good job. He kept the nose up and we bounced along there. But what he didn't do, we didn't have enough fuel.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Nope. This was a pilot that belonged to the company that was involved with the shooting thing down there. So when we finally got it stopped, we hit a little bush or something. A little tree or something. Anyway, it spun around and stopped. And we were at that point about roughly 2 miles off the airport in Brownville. And the grass was about 2.5 feet to 3 feet, and real mushy. So we got out of there. Both of us were all right, except my friend, you know, thought he had something wrong with his leg, but it wasn't serious. And we couldn't get out of there. Finally, a deputy sheriff came over there carrying, and that's when the fun started. They had a whole bunch of groceries and so forth on that plane, and they were taken down to Alta Vista. And one of them was a flour sack or something. I don't know. It might have been sugar. I don't know. Whatever it was, it busted, broke open. So you could see it. It broke open on the little steps coming down. Was white. So I asked this deputy, I went over and took a piece of it and stuck my finger in my mouth. I came back to the deputy and I said, "Deputy, you and I, there's enough stuff right in the plane right now for you and I to live anywhere we wanted to forever. What do you think?" He about fainted. But anyway, that started it.
So you were making out like it was cocaine or something.
Oh, sure.
But it wasn't.
No.
But not being the person who will let the opportunity for a prank pass you by.
And then we had to get out of there. And then when we finally got a four-wheel vehicle down there to get us out of there, we were riding with the ambulance. And my friend was in the back, stretched out, and this guy was riding along with him. Next thing you know, he's on the other side of the road and he's running somebody off it. And I said, "Don't you think we ought to need a little something?" He said, "Oh, you want the siren? Turn that on." So we were all over the road. And I said, I was thinking, "My God, here it is. We get our plane wrecked and this guy's going to kill us both." So I got to talking to him, got him calm down, because I think he was new on the job. And this other guy in the back was interesting too, because my friend was not hurt, but he was, this guy was trying to rub him all over. But anyway, we got to the hospital. He went in the hospital. I called my wife, told her we'd been at what had happened. She said, "I know, I just talked to you 3 hours ago." And I said, "Wait a minute, let me tell you something happened." I said, "We've had a little problem since I talked with you." Anyway,
I hope you found yourself a good lawyer and we sued.
Let me tell you, just a minute. I called three lawyers that I knew of, and this one was the first one to call me back.
Joe Jamil. Oh, Joe Jamil. Joe Jamil. Yeah.
He's dead now, from Houston. He was a billionaire on plaintiff's personal injury cases. And he was tried his last one, I think he was 87, 88. So Joe called me back. I'd met him at the Inner Circle. So, and he said, he got us a lawyer down in Brownville. And we went out there and settled the case for whatever we had. Not much, but we did get something out of it. But got a hell of a good experience.
Mm-mm-mm. Booty, is there one particular case you'll never forget?
I hope so. A Greyhound bus at nighttime, or early in the morning, going north on old US 1, hit this mosquito control vehicle, sprayer, and killed the driver. We tried the case. I did. We're here in the Melbourne courthouse. We got a verdict against the bus company. They appealed. They got behind, and they didn't have any bond up. I talked to the lawyers, and they said, "Oh, we'll get to it," or something like that. But anyway, ultimately they didn't. So I filed a little suit with the trial judge, and he issued a warrant out for Greyhound buses to be delivered to Melbourne. I got all kinds of pictures in here. Well, the sheriff had called me and says, "I don't think I ought to do this." And I said, "Oh, yeah, it's the law." He said, "Yeah, but I don't think I should do it." And I said, "Well, don't do it then, Sheriff, and enjoy the evening and see how it reads in the paper in the morning." So anyway, they collected, I think, 9 buses. One of them, they got the people off in Titusville. I got a picture of that. And I called Washington, D.C. and got a hold of whoever it was, Commerce or something. Anyway, somebody up there, and they said, "Well, just don't take any people and don't injure anything, but have them bring buses." I said, "Okay." So they did. The sheriff then called me and said, "What do you want me to do with these buses?" I said, "That's your job." So, which is true. So anyway, every time I think about something, I mean, we had a big laugh about that one, because it was...
So you got the company's attention when you did that, and they settled pretty quickly. They paid their debt.
Somebody called me, a lawyer from somebody up there, wanted to know who is Attorney Nance. And I said, "You're talking to him." He said, "Oh, I mean the guy, the lawyer." I said, "What for?" And I remember him saying, "You got some small town country sheriff taking over these buses." And I said, "Yeah," and he was a retired detective captain from New York City, too, which is true. Mm. That shut him up. it was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun, and it didn't hurt anybody.
So Greyhound eventually did pay their settlement.
They put a bond up the next day.
Booty, among your numerous achievements, you're a member of the Inner Circle of Advocates, an invitation-only group of 100 lawyers. You're former president, longtime board member of that same group. You've been on the executive committee of the National Trial Lawyers, very involved earlier in your career with the Florida Justice Association. What impact has the Florida Justice Association had on your career?
Well, I've gone to a lot of seminars earlier, and I watched some really fine lawyers and some not so fine, and I've gotten a lot of help from them. And if I had some big question, I'd call one of them and I'd get a good response from them. Or we'd go to some of these meetings and they would cover details that should be recognized and usually not.
How have you balanced your professional life with your family life?
Well, I've been married this time 52 years. I just say I tried to somehow keep the law in the office and let my family take its course.
And one of your sons, Jamie, is a partner here in the law firm?
Yes.
You've got to be very proud.
He went to good schools, and he's worked for a good, excellent law firm. And I'm proud of him, too. I mean, he's very quick mentally.
Booty, what's your view on the future of the legal profession? Do you have concerns?
We got too many lawyers. And just like we have too many people, it's hard to for a young lawyer to, if he doesn't go with a really good firm, it's hard to go out and do what I did when I came here because the competition is too severe. I think as far as the advertisement is concerned, I think they've made a grave mistake. They've made several of them, and people advertise and over-advertise like used car salesmen, so to speak. That's the way they treated the lawyers as far as the advertisement is concerned.
And that's the Florida Bar?
Florida Bar. Yeah, I have no hesitancy about that.
You said there's a lot of competition today, a lot more competition today than
no
when,
question.
When you were. Is that what's driven the need to advertise so much, do you think?
I don't know what they would be advertising, but it should be more restrictive. When I first started, you could have one sign with 4 inches, with a letterhead with 4 inches, period. And then to be in the phone book. I mean, and next thing, one thing led to another. Now you can even put them out of the verdicts and what you, or you can lie about it if you want to. They may be doing that too.
What one piece of advice do you have for incoming lawyers today?
Don't fake it. If you want to be a lawyer, you're going to have to do some hard down nooks, so they call it shooting marbles, and you have to be sure you want to be honest and believing and the ability to cope with failure.
Booty, you've also scored some accolades over the years as a big game hunter in Africa and in Canada with several records. Has that been your relief valve from the practice of law?
Some people go to alcohol, and some people go to something else, but I've enjoyed the hunting, and I still do deer hunting and so forth. I'm down to that now, but that's not down to it. That's all I feel I can do with this neuropathy. Going to Africa is different. It's a different world. It's a great experience. And we've had it's hard to just explain it, but it's just a different world from over here, and my son just came back from over there three weeks ago. He had another guy from here, from another partner here at the office, and I would have been over there had I been able to walk.
Tell me about that big bear that's well over 6 foot sitting in the corner of your office.
That's in Saskatchewan. I was out there hunting, and it's a springtime bear, and it would weigh a 150, maybe 200 pounds more if it were in the fall, particularly late fall, before it hibernated.
Now, the sign on it says 490 pounds.
Yeah, well, that's what they measured it at some time later.
That's heavy enough.
The bear came in, several others came in before that, but they told me about this one bear that somebody had missed, another hunter. I had been in this seat, strapped in for 2 hours, at least 2 hours. And so when I shot it, I was turned this way, and I turned to the right with my gun in my right shoulder, and I shot it, and it took off, my guide, I got on the phone and called him, and he came in about 15 minutes, 20 minutes later. He said, well, I said, don't go anywhere. I'm going up here. I'll find him. Find the bear. Go anywhere. Hell, I couldn't get out anyway. And so when he finally came back, I was more than happy to see him, because otherwise you're just out there. Nobody knew where you were, other than him,
Booty, how would you like to be remembered?
Well, so many, I know so many of my friends are gone, and I remember them all for different reasons. I like to be remembered as a would-be hunter and a lawyer, and honest lawyer, I'm about to say, and joker with a lot of good times in my soul and body.
Bootie Nance, you are a titan of trial. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
This is Paul Jess. We hope you enjoyed listening to this Titans of Trial episode. If you're not already a member, we'd like to invite you to join the Florida Justice Association. Please visit us on the web at floridajusticeassociation.org or drop us a line at radio@floridajusticeassociation.org.
Thank you for listening to this Titans of Trial podcast, sponsored by the Florida Justice Association Research and Education Foundation, promoting the study and understanding of Florida's civil justice system and how its preservation benefits consumers, victims, and all Floridians. Learn more at floridajusticeassociation.org.